Star Wars, Dark Force Rising, by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 10, side 2. The rest of the crowd was alive with whispered conversation, most of it between the city dwellers and the villagers. What they were saying, Leia didn't know, but wherever her eyes turned, the Nogri fell silent and gazed back in obvious fascination. The city was smaller than Leia had expected, particularly given the limited land area the Nogri had available to them. After only a few minutes, they arrived at the Grand Duca. From its name, Leia had expected it to be simply a larger version of the Duca back in the village. It was certainly larger, but despite the similarity in design, there was a far different sense to this version. Its walls and roof were made of silver-blue metal instead of wood, with no carvings of any sort on their surfaces. The supporting pillars were black, metal or worked stone, Leia couldn't tell which. A wide set of black and red marbled steps led up to a gray flagstone entrance terrace outside the double doors. The whole thing seemed cold and remote, very different from the mental picture of the Nogri ethos that she'd built up over the past few days. Fleetingly, she wondered if the Grand Duca had been built not by the Nogri, but by the Empire. At the top of the steps stood a row of 13 middle-aged Nogri males, each wearing an elaborately tooled garment that looked like a cross between a vest and a shawl. Behind them, his arms and legs chained to a pair of upright posts in the middle of the terrace, was Kabarak. Leia gazed past the row of dynasts at him, a ripple of sympathetic ache running through her. The Matriarch had described the mechanics of a Nogri public humiliation to her, but it was only as she looked at him that she began to grasp the full depth of the shame involved in the ritual. Kabarak's face was haggard and pale, and he sagged with fatigue against the chains holding his wrists and upper arms. But his head was upright, his dark eyes alert and watching. The crowd parted to both sides as the land speeder reached the Duca area, forming a passage for the vehicle to move through. The official escort went up the stairs, forming a line between the crowd and the row of dynasts. "Remember, we're not here to fight," Leia murmured to Chewbacca. And summoning every bit of regal demeanor she could muster, she stepped out of the landspeeder and walked up the stairs. The last rustle of conversation in the crowd behind her vanished as she reached the top. "I greet you, dynasts of the Nogri people," she said in a loud voice. "I am Leia Organa Solo, daughter of your Lord Darth Vader, he who came to you in your distress and brought you aid." She held out the back of her hand toward the Nogri in the center of the line. He gazed at her for a moment without moving. Then, with obvious reluctance, he stepped forward and gingerly sniffed at her hand. He repeated the test twice before straightening up again. "The Lord Vader is dead," he said. "Our new Lord, the Grand Admiral, has ordered us to bring you to him, Leia Organa Solo. You will come with us to await the preparation of transport." From the bottom of the steps, Chewbacca growled warningly. Leia quieted him with a gesture and shook her head. "I have not come here to surrender to your Grand Admiral," she told the dynast. "You will do so nonetheless," he said. He signaled, and two of the guards left their line and moved toward Leia. She stood her ground, again signaling Chewbacca to do the same. "Do you serve the Empire, then, or the people of honor?" "All Nogri of honor serve both," the dynast said. "Indeed," Leia said. "Does serving honor now mean sending generation after generation of young men to die in the Empire's wars?" "You are an alien," the dynast said contemptuously. "You know nothing about the honor of the Nogri." He nodded to the guards now standing at Leia's sides. take her into the Dukkha. Are you then so afraid of the words of a lone alien woman? Leia asked, as the Nogri took her arms in a firm grip. Or is it that you fear your own power will be diminished by my coming? You will speak no words of discord and poison, the Dynast snarled. Chewbacca rumbled again, and Leia could sense him preparing to leap up the stairs to her aid. My words are not of discord, she said, raising her voice loud enough for the whole crowd to hear. My words are of treachery. There was a sudden stirring from the crowd. You will be silent, the Dynast insisted, or I will have you silenced. I would hear her speak, the Matrok called from below. You will be silent as well, the Dynast barked, as the crowd murmured approval of the Matrok's demand. You have no place or speech here, Matrok of the clan Kimbar. I have not called a convocate of the Nogri people. Yet the convocate is here, the Matrok countered. The Lady Vader has come. We would hear her words. Then you will hear them in prison. The Dynast gestured, and two more of the official guard left their line, heading purposefully toward the steps. It was, Leia judged, the right moment. Glancing down at her belt, she reached out through the Force with all the power and control she could manage. And her lightsaber leaped from her belt, breaking free from its quick release and jumping up in front of her. Her eyes and mind found the switch, and with a snap, hiss, the brilliant green-white blade flashed into existence, carving out a vertical line between her and the line of Dynasts. There was a sound like a hissing gasp from the crowd. The two Nogri who had been moving toward the Matrok froze in mid-stride, and as the gasp vanished into utter silence, Leia knew that she'd finally gotten their complete attention. I am not merely the daughter of the Lord Vader, she said, putting an edge of controlled anger into her voice. I am the Mal-Ari Ush, heir to his authority and his power. I have come through many dangers to reveal the treachery that has been done to the Nogri people. She withdrew as much of her concentration as she could risk from the floating lightsaber to look slowly down the line of Dynasts. Will you hear me, or will you instead choose death? For a long minute, the silence remained unbroken. Leia listened to the thudding of her heart and the deep hum of the lightsaber, wondering how long she could hold the weapon steady in midair before losing control of it. And then, from halfway down the line to her left, one of the Dynasts took a step forward. I would hear the words of the Mal-Ari Ush, he said. The first Dynast spat. Do not add your own discord, Irkheim, he warned. You see here only a chance to save the honor of the clan Kimbar. Perhaps I see a chance to save the honor of the Nogri people, Vorkork, Irkheim retorted. I would hear the Mal-Ari Ush speak. Do I stand alone? Silently, another Dynast stepped forward to join him. Then another did so, and another, until 9 of the 13 stood with Irkheim. Vorkork hissed between his teeth, but stepped back to his place in line. The Dynasts of Honor have chosen, he growled. You may speak. The two guards released her arms. Leia counted out two more seconds before reaching a hand up to take the lightsaber and close it down. I will tell the story twice, she said, turning to the crowd as she returned the weapon to her belt. Once as the Empire has told you, once as it truly is. You may then decide for yourselves whether or not the Nogri debt has been paid. You all know the history of how your world was devastated by the battle in space. How many of the Nogri were killed by the volcanoes and earthquakes and killer seas that followed, until a remnant arrived here to this place? How the Lord Darth Vader came to you and offered you aid? How, after the falling of the strange-smelling rains, all plants except the comb grass withered and died? How the Empire told you the ground had been poisoned with chemicals from the destroyed ship and offered machines to clean the soil for you? And you know all too well the price they demanded for those machines. "Yet the ground is indeed poisoned," one of the Dynasts told her. "I and many others have tried through the years to grow food in places where the machines have not been, but the seed was wasted, for nothing would grow." "Yes," Leia nodded, "but it was not the soil that was poisoned, or rather, not the soil directly." She signaled to Chewbacca. Reaching back into the land speeder, he picked up the analyzer unit and one of the comb grass plants and brought them up the steps to her. "I will now tell you the story that is true," Leia said as the Wookiee went back down the steps. "After the Lord Vader left in his ship, other ships came. They flew far and wide over your world. To any who asked, they probably said they were surveying the land, perhaps searching for other survivors or other habitable places. But that was all a lie. Their true purpose was to seed your world with a new type of plant." She held up the comb grass. "This plant." "Your truth is dreams," the Dynast wore cork spat. "Comb grass has grown on honor since the beginning of knowledge."
"I didn't say this was comb grass," Leia countered. "It looks like the comb grass you remember, and even smells very much like it, but not exactly. It is, in fact, a subtle creation of the Empire, sent by the Emperor to poison your world."
The silence of the crowd broke into a buzz of stunned conversation. Leia gave them time, letting her gaze drift around the area as she waited. There must be close to 1,000 Nogri pressed around the Grand Duca, she estimated, and more were still coming into the area. The word about her must still be spreading, she decided, and glanced around to see where they were coming from. And as she looked off to her left, a slight glint of metal caught her eye. Well back from the Grand Duca, half hidden in the long early morning shadows beside another building, was the boxy shape of a decon droid. Leia stared at it, a shiver of sudden horror running through her. A decon droid with unusual curiosity. 3PO had mentioned that, but she'd been too preoccupied at the time to pay any attention to his concerns. But for a decon droid to be in Stow, 50 kilometers or more from its designated work area, was far more than just overdeveloped curiosity. It had to be. She squatted down, mentally berating herself for her carelessness. Of course the Grand Admiral wouldn't have just flitted away on the spur of the moment, not without leaving someone or something to keep an eye on things. "Chewie, over there to your right," she hissed. "Looks like a decon droid, but I think it's an espionage droid." The Wookiee growled something vicious and started pushing his way through the crowd. But even as the Nogri made way for him, Leia knew he would never make it. Espionage droids weren't brilliant, but they were smart enough to know not to hang around after their cover had been blown. Long before Chewbacca could get over there, it would be off and running. If it had a transmitter, and if there were any Imperial ships within range. "People of honor," she shouted over the conversation, "I will prove to you right now the truth of what I say. One of the Emperor's decon droids is there." She pointed to it. "Bring it to me." The crowd turned to look, and Leia could sense their uncertainty. But before anyone could move,
The droid abruptly vanished around the corner of the building it had been skulking beside. A second later, Leia caught a glimpse of it between two other buildings, scuttling away for all it was worth. It was, tactically, the worst decision the droid could have made. Running away was as good as admitting guilt, particularly in front of a people who had grown up with the things and knew exactly what the normal behavioral range of a decon droid was. The crowd roared, and from the rear, perhaps 50 of the older adolescents took off after it. And as they did so, one of the guards on the terrace beside Leia cupped his hand around his mouth and sent a piercing half-scream into the air. Leia jerked away, ears ringing with the sound. The guard screamed again, and this time there was an answer from somewhere in the near distance. The guard switched to a warble that sounded like a complicated medley of bird calls. A short reply, and both fell silent. "He calls others to the hunt," the Matrox told Leia. Leia nodded, squeezing her hands into fists as she watched the pursuers disappear around a corner after the droid. If the droid had a transmitter, it would right now be frantically dumping its data. And then, suddenly, the pursuers were back in sight, accompanied by a half-dozen adult Nogri males. Held aloft like the prize from a hunt, struggling uselessly in their grip, was the droid. Leia took a deep breath. "Bring it here to me," she said, as the party approached. They did so, six of the adolescents lugging it up the stairs and laying it on its back on the terrace. Leia ignited her lightsaber, her eyes searching the droid as she did so for signs of a concealed antenna port. She couldn't see one, but that by itself didn't prove anything. Steeling herself for the worst, she sliced a vertical cut through the droid's outer shell. Two more crosswise cuts, and its internal workings were laid out for all to see. Chewbacca was already kneeling beside the droid as Leia shut down her lightsaber, his huge fingers probing delicately among the maze of tubes and cables and fibers. Near the top of the cavity was a small gray box. He threw a significant look at Leia and pulled it free from its connections. Leia swallowed as he laid it on the ground beside him. She recognized it all right from long and sometimes bitter experience. The motivator recorder unit from an Imperial probe droid. But the antenna connector jack was empty. Luck or the Force was still with them. Chewbacca was poking around the lower part of the cavity now. Leia watched as he pulled several cylinders out of the tangle, examined their markings, and returned them to their places. The crowd was starting to murmur again, when, with a satisfied murmur of his own, he pulled out a large cylinder and slender needle from near the intake hopper. Gingerly, Leia took the cylinder from him. It shouldn't be dangerous to her, but there was no point in taking chances. "I call on the dynasts to bear witness that this cylinder was indeed taken from the inside of this machine," she called to the crowd.
"Is this your proof?"
Yerkayim asked, eyeing the cylinder doubtfully.
"It is," Leia nodded. "I have said that these plants are not the Colmgrass you remember from before the disaster, but I have not yet said what is different about them."
Picking up one of the plants, she held it up for them to see. "The Emperor's scientists took your Colmgrass and changed it," she told the crowd. "They created differences that would breed true between generations. The altered smell you have noticed is caused by a chemical which the stem, roots, and leaves secrete. A chemical which has one purpose only, to inhibit the growth of all other plant life. The machines that the Grand Admiral claims are cleaning the ground are in fact doing nothing but destroying this special Colmgrass which the Empire planted."
"Your truth is again dreams," Vorkork scoffed. The droid machines require nearly 2 tens of days to cleanse a single pirka of land. My daughters could destroy the comb grass there in one.
Leia smiled grimly. Perhaps the machines don't require as much time as it appears. Let's find out.
Holding the comb grass out in front of her, she eased a drop of pale liquid from the tip of the needle and touched it to the stem. It was as dramatic a demonstration as she could have hoped for. The drop soaked through the dull brown surface of the plant, and for a handful of seconds, nothing seemed to happen. There was a faint sizzling sound, and then, without warning, the plant suddenly began to turn black and wither. There was a hissing gasp from the crowd as the patch of catalytic destruction spread along the stem toward the leaves and roots. Leia held it up a moment longer, then dropped it on the terrace. There it lay, writhing like a dry branch thrown into a fire, until there was nothing left but a short and unrecognizable filament of wrinkled black. Leia touched it tentatively with the toe of her boot, and it disintegrated into a fine powder. She had expected another outburst of surprise or outrage from the crowd. Their dead silence was, in its own way, more unnerving than any noise would have been. The Nogri understood the implications of the demonstration, all right. And as she looked around at their faces, she knew that she'd won. She put the cylinder down on the terrace beside the destroyed plant and turned to face the dynasts. "I have shown you my proof," she said. "You must now decide whether the Nogri debt has been paid." She looked at Vorkork, and moved by an impulse she couldn't explain, she unhooked her lightsaber from her belt and put it in his hand. Stepping past him, she went over to Kavarach. "I'm sorry," she said softly. "I didn't expect for you to have to go through anything like this because of me." Kavarach opened his mouth in a needle-toothed Nogri smile. "The Empire has long taught us that it is a warrior's pride and duty to face pain for his overlord. Should I do less for the Mal-Ari-Ush of the Lord Vader?" Leia shook her head. "I'm not your overlord, Kavarach, and I never will be. The Nogri are a free people. I came only to try to restore that freedom to you.
And to bring us on your side against the Empire,"
Vorkork said caustically from behind her. Leia turned. "That would be my wish," she agreed, "but I do not ask it." Vorkork studied her a moment. Then, reluctantly, he handed her lightsaber back to her.
"The dynasts of honor cannot and will not make so important a decision in a single day," he said. "There is much to consider, and a full convocate of the Nogri people must be called." "Then call it," Kavarach urged. "The Mal-Ari-Ush of the Lord Vader is here."
"And can the Mal-Ari-Ush protect us from the might of the Empire should we choose to defy it?" Vorkork countered.
"But..."
"No, Kavarach, he's right," Leia said. "The Empire would rather kill you all than let you defect, or even become neutral."
"Have the Nogri forgotten how to fight?" Kavarach scoffed. "And has Kavarach Clan Kimbar forgotten what happened to honor 48 years ago? Vorkork snapped. "If we defy the Empire now, we would have no option but to leave our world and hide."
"And doing that would guarantee the instant slaughter of the commando teams that are out serving the Empire," Leia pointed out to Kavarach. "Would you have them die without even knowing the reason? There is no honor in that."
"You speak wisdom, Lady Vader," Vorkork said.
And for the first time, Leia thought she could detect a trace of grudging respect in his eyes.
True warriors understand the value of patience. You will leave us now?
Yes, Leia nodded. My presence here is still a danger to you. I would ask one favor, that you would allow Kabarak to return me to my ship.
Verkork looked at Kabarak. Kabarak's family conspired to free him, he said. They succeeded, and he escaped into space. Three commando teams who were here on leave have followed in pursuit. The entire clan Kimbar will be in disgrace until they yield up the names of those responsible.
Leia nodded. It was as good a story as any. Just be sure to warn the commandos you send to be careful when they make contact with the other teams. If even a hint of this gets back to the Empire, they'll destroy you.
Do not presume to tell warriors their job, Verkork retorted. He hesitated. Can you obtain more of this for us? He asked, gesturing back at the cylinder.
Yes, Leia said. We'll need to go to Endor first and pick up my ship. Kabarak can accompany me back to Coruscant then, and I'll get him a supply.
The Dynast hesitated. There is no way to bring it sooner?
A fragment of conversation floated up from Leia's memory. The Matroc mentioning that the window for planting this season's crops was almost closed.
There might be, she said. Kabarak, how much time would we save if we skipped Endor and went directly to Coruscant?
Approximately 4 days, Lady Vader, he said.
Leia nodded. Han would kill her for leaving his beloved Falcon sitting in orbit at Endor like that, but there was no way around it.
All right, she nodded. That's what we'll do then. Don't forget to be careful where you use it, though. You can't risk incoming Imperial ships spotting new cropland.
Do not presume either to tell farmers their job, Verkork said. But this time there was a touch of dry humor in his voice. We will eagerly await its arrival.
Then we'd better leave at once, Leia said. She looked past him to the Matroc and nodded her head in thanks. Finally, everything was starting to go their way. Despite her earlier doubts, the Force was clearly with her. Turning back to Kabarak, she ignited her lightsaber and cut him loose from his chains. Come on, Kabarak, she said. Time to go.
Chapter 25. The Coral Vanda billed itself as the most impressive casino in the galaxy, and as he looked around the huge and ornate Tralla room, Han could understand why he'd never heard of anyone challenging that claim. The room had at least a dozen sabacc tables scattered around its three half-levels, plus a whole range of lugjack bars, tregal booths, holo chess tables, and even a few of the traditional horseshoe-shaped warp tops favored by hardcore Krynvid fanatics. A bar bisecting the room stocked most anything a customer would want to drink, either to celebrate a win or forget a loss. And there was a serving window built into the back wall for people who didn't want to stop playing, even to eat. And when you got tired of looking at your cards or into your glass, there was the view through the full-wall transparent outer hull. Rippling blue-green water, hundreds of brilliantly colored fish and small sea mammals, and around all of it the intricate winding loops and fans of the famous Pantalomin coral reefs. The Tralla room was, in short, as fine a casino as Han had ever seen in his life, and the Coral Vanda had seven other rooms just like it. Sitting at the bar beside him, Lando downed the last of his drink and pushed the glass away from him. So what now? He asked. He's here, Lando, Han told him, tearing his gaze from the reef outside and looking one more time around the casino. Somewhere. I think he's skipped this trip, Lando disagreed,
probably ran out of money. Remember what Sena said. The guy spends it like poisoned water.
Yeah, but if he was out of money, he'd be trying to sell them another ship, Anne pointed out.
He drained his own glass and got up from his seat. Come on, one more room to go.
And then we do it all over again, Lando growled. And again, and again.
It's a waste of time.
You got any other ideas?
Matter of fact, I do, Lando said, as they swung wide to get around a large Herglick balanced precariously across two of the seats and headed down the bar toward the exit.
Instead of just wandering around like we have for the past 6 hours, we should plant ourselves at a sabacc table somewhere and start dropping some serious money. Word'll get around that there are a couple of pikers ripe for plucking. And if this guy loses money as fast as Sena says, he'll be plenty interested in trying to make some of it back.
Pan looked at his friend in mild surprise. He'd had the same idea a couple of hours ago, but hadn't figured on Lando going for it.
You think your professional gambler's pride can take that kind of beating?
Lando looked him straight in the eye.
If it'll get me out of here and back to my mining operation, my pride can take anything.
He grimaced. He sometimes forgot that he'd kind of dragged Lando into all of this.
Yeah, he said.
Sorry.
Okay, tell you what. We'll give the Safkin room one last look. If he's not there, we'll come back here and...
He broke off. There on the bar, in front of an empty seat, was a tray with a still smoldering cigar sitting in it. A cigar with an unusual but very familiar aroma to it.
Uh-oh, Lando said quietly at his shoulder.
I don't believe it, Anne said, dropping his hand to his blaster as he threw a quick look around the crowded room.
Believe it, buddy, Lando said.
He touched the cushion of the vacant seat.
It's still warm. He must be... There he is.
It was Niles Ferrier, all right, standing beneath the ornate shimmer glass exit archway, another of his ever-present cigars gripped between his teeth. He grinned at them, made a sort of mock salute, and disappeared out the door.
Well, that's just great, Lando said. Now what?
He wants us to follow him, Anne said, throwing a quick glance around them. He didn't see anyone he recognized, but that didn't mean anything. Ferrier's people were probably all around them.
Let's go see what he's up to.
It could be a trap, Lando warned.
Or he could be ready to deal, Anne countered.
Keep your blaster ready.
No kidding.
They were halfway to the archway when they heard it, a short, deep-toned thud like a distant crack of thunder. It was followed by another, louder one, and then a third. The conversational din of the casino faltered as others paused to listen, and as they did so, the choral vanda seemed to tremble a little.
Han looked at Lando.
You thinking what I'm thinking? He muttered.
Turbo laser bursts hitting the water, Lando murmured grimly.
Ferrier's dealing all right, only not with us.
Han nodded, feeling a hard knot settle into his stomach.
Ferrier had gone ahead and made a deal with the Empire. And if the Imperials got their hands on the Katana fleet, the balance of power in the ongoing war would suddenly be skewed back in their favor, and under the command of a Grand Admiral.
We've got to find that ship dealer and fast, he said, hurrying toward the exit. Maybe we can get him out in an escape pod or something before we're boarded.
Hopefully before the rest of the passengers start panicking, Lando added. Let's go.
They'd made it to the archway when their time ran out. There was a sudden thunderclap, not distant this time, but seemingly right on top of them.
and for a second, the coral reef outside the transparent hull lit up with an angry green light. The coral panda lurched like a wounded animal, and Han grabbed at the edge of the archway for balance. Something caught his arm and pulled hard, yanking him out of the archway to his right. He grabbed reflexively for his blaster, but before he could draw it, strong, furry arms wrapped around his chest and face, pinning his gun hand to his side and blotting out all view of the sudden panic in the corridor. He tried to shout, but the arm was blocking his mouth as well as his eyes. Struggling uselessly, swearing under what breath he could get, he was hauled backwards down the corridor. Two more thunderclaps came, the second nearly throwing both him and his attacker off their feet. A change of direction sideways. His elbow banged against the side of a doorway. A hard shove, and he was free again, gasping for breath. He was in a small drinks storage room, with crates of bottles lining three of the walls almost to the ceiling. Several had already been knocked to the floor by the coral vanda's lurching, and out of one of them, a dark red liquid was oozing. Lounging beside the door, grinning again, was Ferrier.
"Hello, Solo," he said. "Nice of you to drop in."
It was too kind an invitation to turn down, Han said sourly, looking around. His blaster was hovering in front of a stack of crates 2 meters away, right in the middle of a thick and strangely solid shadow.
"You remember my wraith, of course," Ferrier said blandly,
gesturing at the shadow.
"He's the one who sneaked up onto the Lady Luck's ramp to plant our backup homing beacon. The one inside the ship."
So that was how Ferrier had managed to get here so fast. Another thunderclap shook the coral vanda, and another crate tottered too far and crashed to the floor. Han jumped back out of the way and took a closer look at the shadow. This time he was able to pick out the eyes and a glint of white fangs. He'd always thought wraiths were just space legend. Apparently not. "It's not too late to make a deal," he told Ferrier. The other gave him a look of surprise.
"This is your deal, Solo," he said. "Why else do you think you're in here instead of out where shooting's about to start? We're just going to keep you here nice and safe until things settle down again."
He cocked an eyebrow.
"Galrissian now, he's another story."
Han frowned at him.
"What do you mean?"
"I mean that I'm tired of him getting in my way," Ferrier said softly. "So when the Coral Vanda finally gives up and surfaces, I'm going to make sure he's right up there in front, trying valiantly to protect poor Captain Hoffner from the evil stormtroopers. With any luck..." He spread his hands and smiled.
"Hoffner's the guy's name, huh?" Han said, fighting his anger down. Getting mad wasn't going to help Lando any.
"Suppose he's not on board. The Imperials won't be happy about that."
"Oh, he's aboard," Ferrier assured him. "Getting a little stir-crazy, though. He's been sort of locked in our suite since about an hour after we sailed."
"You sure you got the right guy?" Ferrier shrugged. "If not, the Grand Admiral has only himself to blame. He's the one who supplied me with the name." Another blast rocked the ship.
"Well, nice talking to you, Solo, but I've got a deal to close," Ferrier said,
regaining his balance and hitting the door release.
"See you around."
"We'll pay you twice what the Empire's offering," Han said, trying one last time. Ferrier didn't even bother to answer. Smiling one last time, he slipped out the door and closed it behind him. Han looked at the shadow that was the wraith.
"How about you?" he asked. "You want to be rich?"
The wraith showed its teeth, but made no other reply. There was another thunderclap, and they were jerked hard to the side. The Coral Vanda was a well-built ship, but Han knew it couldn't stand up to this kind of pounding for long. Sooner or later, it would have to give up and surface. And then the stormtroopers would come. He had just that long to find a way out of here. The Chimera's turbolaser batteries fired again, and on the bridge holo display, a short red line dug briefly into the sea near the tapered black cylinder that marked the Coral Vanda's position. For an instant, the red line was sheathed in the pale green of seawater, suddenly flashed into superheated steam. And then the pale green spread outward in all directions, and the Coral Vanda rocked visibly as the shockwave passed it. "They're stubborn, I'll give them that," Pelion commented.
"They have a great many wealthy patrons aboard," Thrawn reminded him. "Many of whom would rather drown than give up their money under threat of force."
Pelion glanced at his readouts. "It won't be long until they're at that choice. Main propulsion's been knocked out. Then they're developing microfractures in their hull seams. Computer projects that if they don't surface in 10 minutes, they won't be able to."
"They're a ship full of gamblers, Captain," Thrawn said. "They'll gamble on the strength of their ship while they seek an alternative."
Pelion frowned at the holo display. What alternative could they possibly have?
"Observe."
Thrawn touched his board, and a small white circle appeared on the holo in front of the Coral Vanda, extending backward like the path of a crazed worm.
"There appears to be a path here beneath this section of the reef that would allow them to evade us, at least temporarily. I believe that's where they're heading."
"They'll never make it," Pelion decided. "Not the way they're bouncing around down there. Best to be sure, though. A shot right at the entrance to that maze should do it."
"Yes," Thrawn said, his voice meditative. "A pity, though, to have to damage any of these reefs. They're genuine works of art. Unique, perhaps, in that they were created by living yet non-sentient beings. I should have liked to have studied them more closely."
He turned to Pelion again, gave a short nod.
"You may fire when ready."
There was another clap of thunder as the Imperial ship overhead flash-boiled the water near them. And as the Coral Vanda lurched to the side, Han made his move. Letting the ship's motion throw him sideways, he half-staggered, half-fell across the storeroom to slam into one of the stacks of crates, turning at the last instant so that his back was to them. This book is continued on cassette number 11, side 1.